Welcome to Soundprint. I'm Lisa Simeone. Among many quotable quotes from the legendary sitcom Seinfeld, I love this one from an episode in season two called The Phone Message. Jerry's pouring a glass of wine when he says, "I'm lactose intolerant. I have no patience for lactose, and I won't stand for it." Pardon my delivery, but it's still a funny line. Then again, as so often with humor, it's something funny about something serious. People who have food allergies or diseases that prevent them from eating certain foods are dealing with potentially catastrophic problems. But perhaps the biggest problem is just getting diagnosed. Millions of people go their entire lives just not feeling good. They may blame themselves, or their friends and family may blame them. They know there's something wrong, but no doctor has been able to figure out what, so they suffer. In today's Soundprint, producer Richard Paul takes us into the lives of people who have suffered because they can't tolerate one particular type of food. He calls the program Gut Reaction.
These days, you'd probably say there are no more taboos. All the things that used to be off limits to talk about. They couldn't say pregnant on I Love Lucy. Menopause? Phil Donahue knocked that one down. Then, in the 80s, Dr. Ruth, and suddenly there's no kind of sex you couldn't talk about right there on network radio. And what doesn't Howard Stern talk about? No more taboos, right? Well, actually, there's one left. You can see it on the evening news in between the stories about all those other things that you can talk about. It's there, hinted at, suggested, like in your mom's day when they used to say expecting or love act, like they used to say ladies' time.
Got gas, pressure, bloating?
When you've got heartburn, don't wait a second longer than you have to for relief.
My acid reflux disease.
Tums EX can't keep acid from coming back.
Gas X beats the bloat, and acids don't.
Nausea, indigestion, heartburn, upset stomach, diarrhea.
Yay, Pepto-Bismol!
Yeah, there's one taboo left. And wouldn't you know, it's the one I want to talk about, need to talk about, because people are suffering. Horrible pain, excruciating. An embarrassment, deep, profound embarrassment. And it's frustrating, and it's confounding, and they can't get help because they can't talk about it.
I remember lying on the floor in my bedroom, just staring up at the ceiling and wondering, what is wrong with me? Why is my body in constant turmoil, and what is wrong? And why can't anyone help me? And wondering, is this what dying feels like? I felt like I was dying.
What is it? What's the taboo? It's your gut, not your instinct, your actual gut. More precisely, the stuff inside it, food, after it's left the plate, after it's passed your taste buds, when it's washed with stomach acid, or it isn't, when it's broken down, or it isn't, when it's converted to nutrients, vitamins, calcium, iron, or it isn't. The last taboo, digestion. Who wants to talk about digestion? It's gross. But people are suffering. You might be, or someone you love. And there's something that can stop the suffering. But you don't know, because you can't talk about it.
Celiac disease.
Celiac disease.
C-E-L-I-A-C.
Is also commonly called SPRU. Or celiac sprue.
It's a gut disease.
A intestinal disorder.
That causes the body to respond inappropriately when introduced to certain proteins.
Largely components of wheat, but also of barley and rye cereals.
Wheat, rye, barley, and in this country, oats.
And their immune system attacks the food particles as though they were a virus. And when an individual with celiac disease ingests cereal proteins, their immune system is activated, and what are called T cells respond against the wheat, and this results in an inflammation of the intestine that's very similar to the inflammatory response that the intestine would mount against a virus.
We have little villi in our small intestines, and they act kind of like shag carpet. And when you eat food, those little villi help to absorb nutrients from that food. And when you have celiac disease, those villi are damaged. They're flattened. So rather than being like carpet, they're more like linoleum tile. And all the nutrients you eat from your food just kind of slide on by.
You cannot absorb anything.
When the villi are flattened, then the body is not able to absorb the essential vitamins and nutrients from the food that we eat.
You may be eating a very excellent diet and still not to be getting the benefit of that diet.
It can cause a multitude of symptoms.
It can make some people throw up.
Stomach aches for years and years and years, including diarrhea, constipation, and all that really fun stuff.
You become dehydrated and you become very sick.
My bones were very, very weak and very painful. I couldn't hold a pen.
And I was losing weight tremendously.
And the anemia. Oh my God, the anemia.
Of course, you'll get headaches, you'll get pallor.
Depression.
I had a horrible rash all the time, just very itchy skin.
I lost an inch of my height from my spine just bending from lack of calcium.
And infertility, which is something I know all too well.
Celiac disease. You heard correctly. Your body attacks wheat, barley, and rye like a virus. You think it's a donut. Your body thinks it's a disease. I hadn't heard of celiac disease either, but that didn't mean I didn't have it. You could too, by the latest estimate. A study in 2003 in the Annals of Internal Medicine said 1 in 133 Americans have celiac disease. 1 in 133. These other people whose voices you're hearing, I met them on celiac disease websites. There are lots of them. See, this disease is new. Well, that's not true, of course. The disease isn't new, but today it's a lot easier to diagnose, thanks to a couple of breakthroughs in the last few years, a blood test, and a new flexible scope that can put a camera deeper in your body than before. Because it's also new, a lot of people with celiac disease know as much or more about it than their doctors. I still tell my doctors things they didn't know. But that only helps, you know, a celiac's giving each other information, that only helps after you've been diagnosed. All these years, many American doctors didn't know, so they couldn't spot it.
I'm a registered nurse, and what I had heard of celiac disease is it's a tropical thing. Celiac sprue happens because of some kind of parasite. And oh, yeah, and by the way, there's this little genetic thing, but no, nobody has it. And that's what I was taught. And unfortunately, I think that's what doctors are taught, too.
1 in 133 Americans have celiac disease.
Which actually, if I'm not mistaken, is more common than diabetes.
More prevalent than hypertension, diabetes, a number of those other things that they could talk about being hidden diseases.
But only about 1 in 3 to 5,000 are getting diagnosed.
1 in 133 Americans have it, but only 1 in 4,700 ever get diagnosed. What does that all mean? You'll hear it now. Some of it won't be easy.
We can start way back in childhood.
I was always sick.
I threw up frequently. My stomach always hurt.
I had stomach aches that woke me up in the middle of the night and that took me out of my classroom and into the school nurse's office quite frequently.
I don't want to go to school, Mommy. I ate breakfast. I don't feel good.
The stomach pain is excruciating, like someone lined your insides with razor blades and they're smashing against each other. We'd go out to dinner when I was a kid, and afterwards I'd get in the station wagon and just have to lie down in the back because I couldn't straighten up. Or it would happen at school. Of course, there's one thing that would relieve the pain, but you couldn't do it. Not around other people. They laugh at you. They give you names like Stinky that stick with you for the rest of grade school. The pain comes from the food not breaking down inside your guts. The villi aren't absorbing. No vitamins. No nutrition.
You know, I just never seemed to fit in with the other kids, I think, just because of the way I was.
The skinniest kid in the whole planet.
Nobody wanted to play with me, you know. Nobody wanted me on the team.
I loved to swim, but I was unable to compete in the races and that kind of thing. I also loved to dance. Unfortunately, I didn't have the stamina to really pursue it.
I had broken my arm one time and had gotten the cast off and broke it again the same day and went back to the doctor and he says, you appear to be a China doll. And I ended up breaking my arms over a 2-year period 4 times. And I had broken my leg three times.
I would be told something and then, you know, just forget it immediately.
I always felt a little better when I woke up first thing in the morning. But then right after I ate breakfast, the stomach pain would return.
I was very, very self-conscious of my body. Because my stomach was always bloated, I always felt like I looked pregnant. You know, I'd start out in the morning, you know, maybe a size 6. And by the end of the day, I'd need to wear pants that were a size 8 or 10 because my stomach had bloated so much. My ribs would stick out. My hip bones stuck out. But yet I had a protruding belly. And I can remember being 5 and 6 years old and having kids tease me about looking pregnant.
You know, going to the bathroom was, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 times a day was normal to me.
It was annoying and scary in a sort of a way to have to arrange everything around the bathroom.
I try really hard to act like I'm having a good time, but really I just want to be in the bathroom. If I had known about it all my life.
I often do think what might have been different for me had I had more energy.
I think I would have been much better off knowing sooner.
I might have done all kinds of things had I not just been too darn tired.
I really wanted to be a dancer.
And, you know, when you're like that, you don't go after the football team because there's not enough of you there to be a football player.
I was too sick, and so that was a huge loss for me.
And I really felt like a major failure. that was a tough question.
The thing about celiac disease is it touches everything in your life.
I met my husband. And that was pretty tricky because my first date with him was very romantic. And we went to a wine bar and I couldn't eat anything. I had a terrible stomachache. And, of course, the only thing I picked at that night was bread because it seemed to me like it would have been the safest and most soothing choice. And after that, we went to this very fancy restaurant and we ordered our meals. And sure enough came the stomachache and it was horrendous. And I excused myself and went to the bathroom and didn't come back for about a half hour. And by the time I returned to the table, you know, he was just kind of looking at me, are you okay? And I said, no, I'm not, and we need to leave, and we need to talk. And when we got in the car, I tried to explain to him what my problem was. And at the time, I didn't know what my problem was. I just knew that this happened a lot, that, you know, out of nowhere, I'd get these horrendous stomach aches, and I'd have to go to the bathroom, and I'd have to go immediately, and I'd have to go for a while. And he did not want to hear it. He just kept saying, no, that's okay. You don't have to tell me. And I said, listen, if you want to be in a relationship with me, you need to know this. That was my dating life with my husband. It's pretty amazing that he ended up marrying me.
However, I had some years, and this is pretty typical of celiac disease. I had some years, probably 10 years, when all the bowel symptoms abated. I don't know why.
Until I got to Vietnam, and that's had quite a bit of stress there, and that's where I had a severe case of diarrhea, and the flight surgeon said, well, it was just the food, you know. So I tried eating elsewhere, and then he said, well, he had these little pills, and took these pills, and they restricted the diarrhea, but I had to quit taking them 12 hours before flying. So about 2 hours after they stopped taking the pills, I was back to the John on a regular basis, and well, I think that's a little bit more than you want to hear.
Now, of course, first thing you do, you're sick, you go to the doctor. Didn't help me or any of these other people. By one estimate, only 6% of celiacs are diagnosed by their primary care physician. Here's Kieran Kelly, associate professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School.
U.S.-trained physicians appear to be less aware of the condition, less aware of the myriad of ways in which celiac disease can present, and also seem to be less aware of the correct pathways to either diagnose or exclude celiac disease.
They came up with all kinds of diagnoses, all of which were wrong.
All sorts of things. I had acid reflux, and I had, you know, like, oh gosh, so many things. Like, you know, something about like the way that my intestines sat in my stomach hit nerves in my legs. And
when I was 5 years old, my mother who is a very kind, soft-spoken person, had taken me to the pediatrician once again. And the pediatrician pulled her aside and told her that my problems were because of her and that she was creating my anxiety. And that's what was giving me stomach problems, and that she needed to be a better parent. And my poor mother cried all the way home, and I cried too, because I knew that my parents had nothing to do with it.
The doctor thought that possibly I had a parasite.
I went to a hematologist because blood work that I had had done for my lack of energy came back as positive for blast cells, which are premature white cells. That it's one of the first signifiers of leukemia.
And I was tested and told I probably had lupus, although they could not prove it.
I really felt like I was going crazy there for a while, and all my friends just thought I was such a hypochondriac because I'd be like, I just don't feel good.
Now, I first floated the question of celiac disease when I was in the Air Force, when I was 18 years old, and I said, could I possibly, oh no, you're just having a, they have a name for it, intern's hysteria or something like that, where you read about something and then you, you know, think you have it, and so they dusted it off.
Every doctor sort of looked at me only through the eyes of their own specialty.
And the thing that's really insidious is, as you get older, the symptoms seem to get progressively worse.
I was unable to go more than 40 minutes without using a bathroom.
It was a horror story.
I had gotten to the point where I couldn't take a few steps without there being leakage.
My tongue started to swell up and would crack, and I didn't know why. And
my hair was falling out. I could barely see. I changed my glasses every 6 months, and I still couldn't see.
My wife really got scared, and she told me, she said she never wanted to hear another complaint unless I went back to the doctor, so I did.
And the first question out of his mouth, he says, why are you so pale? And he did a blood test, and he says, look, you're coming back tomorrow morning. I'm doing a blood test right now. We're going to run it tonight. I want you back here tomorrow morning with your wife, and we're going to finish the physical. And the following morning, I came back in, and he says, we need to sit down and talk. And we went in there, and he looked at me and my wife, and he says, I'm going to tell you something. And he says, and I don't know how to say this, but other than the fact, he says, you've got every indication of full-blown colon cancer. And I says, this can't be. He says, well, you're anemic. Everything is pointing to that. He says, we need to put you in the hospital and do a colonoscopy right away.
I went in to see my doctor on an urgent basis. He tried to examine me, and there was a tremendous accident on the floor. I was dying of shame, but I think the doctor was even more mortified because somehow he probably felt that he was responsible for this. But the wonderful thing is, he said, I'll step into the next room and see. There's a doctor here, a new doctor. Maybe she knows something. And this wonderful woman, she came into the room and she says, oh, Ducky, I know exactly what's wrong with you. And she says, we can fix you in a heartbeat. And she had a wonderful English accent. She says, nothing to it. She says, you've got celiac disease. We can fix you. Just like that. And so it was fixed.
Because the condition occurs deep within the body in the small intestine, diagnosis required a sample or a biopsy of the small intestine to be obtained and looked at under the microscope to identify the changes, the inflammation that's associated with celiac disease.
Dr. Kelly, again, from Harvard Medical School.
And this required that the individual have what's called an endoscopy, which is a camera test where a small camera is placed into the mouth, through the esophagus or swallowing tube, through the stomach and into the small intestine to take small pieces of tissue for diagnosis. And obviously this is a somewhat invasive test.
But like we said earlier, the diagnostic tools have improved a lot.
There's been a big change recently in the way in which celiac disease is being diagnosed. And the big change has occurred because of the availability of a simple and non-invasive test that's quite reliable in identifying people who almost certainly have celiac disease. The test is a blood test. So in essence, a simple blood test has replaced an intestinal biopsy, which is much more invasive. And because of that, there's been a huge increase in the numbers of individuals who are being diagnosed with celiac disease.
When the doctor told me that the blood test came back positive for celiac, I was in shock.
And I remember thinking, like, you know, like, in a way, thank God, like, there is something that, you know, something concrete that is wrong with me. It's not all of these, like, phantom illnesses that, you know, no one knows about.
And I was really grateful to have a disease. I mean, it sounds so ridiculous, but it's like, oh my God, thank you. You know, who would be grateful for having a disease? But you are. You're so grateful in that moment because somebody finally says, you're not crazy.
It's a feeling of justification that I'm not crazy. That's how I felt because my inner voice kept telling me something is wrong.
You can actually see the difference. I had the blood test and the endoscopy. Doctors say that's the gold standard for diagnosis. So I've looked at before and after pictures of my gut. I can see the villi are back. I can see areas that were clenched like a fist that are now open. No wonder I feel better.
My stomach aches were gone. I mean, after living a life with stomach aches, I mean, there was not a day that passed where I didn't complain of something. I didn't have them anymore. I mean, I was fine.
I told people I feel better at 75 than I did at 50. Much better.
Happy ending, right? Well, yes and no, because the only way you keep the pain away and all the other stuff is to go on a strict, strict gluten-free diet.
I went down, I got my gluten-free diet, and I started to look through it, and, you know, in a way, I just kind of wanted to cry because...
I mean, I just sat there in the chair going like, okay, what do I eat now?
My favorite food group was essentially wheat.
My whole life was wheat, basically, with the occasional piece of protein thrown in.
You can't eat the bread, the cookies, the all the good stuff, cake.
Couldn't have spaghetti. I used to love spaghetti.
Pizza Hut. Pizza. I mean, I could have lived at Pizza Hut. I could have just, you know, moved to bed into Pizza Hut. I loved Pizza Hut that much. That really just killed me.
But the big thing for me was beer. I traveled to Europe 7 or 8 times to drink beer. And I was a beer connoisseur.
I surfed the net looking for any kind of support that I could, and I found numerous, numerous websites.
If you email and say, help, I'm new, tell me how to start this. You get bombarded with 100 emails from lovely, wonderful people who've been through it.
Just learning about the foods and then finally understanding that there are a lot of foods out there that you can eat. You're not as restricted as what I thought.
All of a sudden, one day you'll look back at what you've eaten over the past year and you'll say, oh, wow, wait a minute. With a few adjustments, I can do this.
As for how you get your doctor to even listen to you if you think you have this, go to the web. Type your symptoms into Google and add the word celiac. Then take the evidence to your doctor and tell him you want the blood test. That'll get you started. There are still a lot of mysteries around this disease. No one knows what triggers that immune response by the gut that treats food like a virus. And there's no cure, no pill you can pop. However, Dr. Kelly of Harvard Medical School says...
There are very many individuals who are on a strict gluten-free diet for celiac disease who would welcome the opportunity of taking a medication that would allow them perhaps to eat out in a restaurant and be less concerned about the possibility of gluten contamination.
And researchers are looking at a few approaches, treatments that would break down cereal protein so they could be digested properly, or a drug that would turn off the immune system so that it doesn't fight against food proteins.
But I would predict that it'll be 5 or 10 years at the earliest before any of these research approaches are available for clinical use.
Until then, a gluten-free diet does the trick. It works.
My challenge lies with actually dealing with the reactions of other people. I've learned that people in general, by nature, tend to be more focused on the negative than the positive. And when I'm in a situation where I need to explain why I can't eat certain things, the general reaction is, oh, that's awful.
Being invited to someone else's house is so often I feel sorry for the hostess. I offer to bring things, and I usually carry a few crackers in my purse.
Well, of course, I'll talk about the rewards. There's nothing better than having a good old gut that feels good.
I had absolutely no idea that you could feel this good.
I just can't believe the change in my health is phenomenal.
You know, had I known that everyone else felt this good all the time, I probably would have raised a stink a lot earlier.
The anemia is gone. I'm not wrestling with my blood sugar all the time. The depression is gone. My eyes have straightened out. It's really, the rewards are just, you can't even list them.
I feel great.
I live every day, in happiness. Even though I know I have a disease, I'm a healthy person.
And it's a blessing with challenges, but it's certainly not a curse. And I wish people would understand that, because when you've walked your entire life with a piano on your back and to have that removed, it's just, you feel like you're walking on air.
Gut Reaction was produced by Richard Paul. This program was produced with support from the Celiac Spru Association, online at csaceliacs.org, and also the Gluten Free Mall and Amy's Kitchen. The music was composed and arranged by Lenny Williams. Special thanks to Cindy, Larry, Desiree, Melissa, Kobina, Kathy, Kim, Dean, Bill, and Kelly for sharing their stories. We have lots more information about this show on our website, soundprint.org. You can listen to all of our programs there, as well as find related shows, reading links, and links to books. The address again is soundprint.org. Soundprint is produced by the Soundprint Media Center in association with WAMU and American University. We love hearing from you. The best way to get in touch is by email. The address is talkback@soundprint.org. On the next Soundprint, a 1960s scheme to get minority youths a better education.
The kids had to live in somebody else's home 4 days a week, go to school 5 days, and they could come home on the weekend. They took care. The kids ate there, slept there. We didn't pay, and there was never any money transacted at all.
And my mother had a friend who lived in Palo Alto. I think one time someone came by this person's house looking for me. And the lady's husband answered the door and told me there was nobody named David Regis that lived there.
Sneak Out, next week on Soundprint. CDs of Soundprint episodes are available for a small fee by calling toll-free 1-888-38-TAPES. That's 1-888-38-TAPES. Or you can order online at soundprint.org. Soundprint is production assistant Nkechi Mogekwu and audio engineer Jared Weisbrot. Our executive producer is Moira Rankin. I'm Lisa Simeone.